This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio.
I dissected this market in several ways. First and foremost, the earnings from Delta this morning were phenomenal.
Oh.
So we keep getting this soft data on how consumers are recoiling. Well, how did they recoil? Delta's earnings were phenomenal. A 20% spike in mortgages to purchase homes.
Mm.
So people are maybe telling folks that they're nervous, but they're going about their business. They have been so far in a positive way.
Well, we've been talking about the economy a little bit in this first segment here on the Annie Fry Show. Ryan Wiggins filling in for Annie. We've got Cully Stimson on the phone right now to talk some legal. He's the senior legal fellow at Heritage. Cully, thanks for being here.
Great to be with you.
Cully, let's talk a little bit about this Supreme Court case that over the weekend got a lot of headlines, and I was reading into it, and I still am a little bit unsure what everybody's position is on this. It just explain the situation. This guy that got deported to El Salvador, but now they're saying, no, you got to legally bring him back. What's the deal with this?
Yeah. So he was here illegally in the country. He faced deportation hearings. He got a deportation order and final order of removal during the previous administration. They didn't kick him out because he didn't show up for his deportation flight home. The Trump administration sent him to El Salvador. ACLU and others ran to court and said, wait, wrong guy, shouldn't deport him. And they got a district court judge to say that the Trump administration need to bring him back. That got appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, understanding that they can't order the commander-in-chief to do things like that, said that the Trump administration should attempt to facilitate his return. It just so happens that the president of El Salvador was coming to the White House today. They had the meeting. The president asked for him to send him back. And the president of El Salvador, President Bukele, said, I'm not doing that. Why would I send a terrorist back to your country? How can I import a terrorist into your country? That's the end of it.
So, Cully, what I keep reading, though, from the mainstream news, which is not always the most pro-Trump, they seem to have a bit of a slant at times, is that Trump is openly defying the court. Is that what's happening?
No. The high court was very clear that the administration needed to attempt to facilitate the return. The way a chief executive of a country facilitates something is you ask the chief executive of the other country where the person is, can I have him back? If the person says no, that's the end of the discussion. You don't send the Navy SEALs in, break them out of a prison, bring them back on a C-130 and say, we facilitated it. Thank you, Supreme Court. We're going to kidnap people from foreign countries. You ask the sovereign of the foreign country. And if the sovereign says no, that's the end of it.
Cully, you know, I think would be helpful is when we talk about these district courts and Supreme Court, obviously everybody knows the Supreme Court's at the top, But what yep. is the line of succession? Are they bringing it to the people right below the Supreme Court, and then the Supreme Court has to overturn it? Or are there courts in between the district and the Supreme? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. So remember, under the Constitution, under Article 3, it sets up a Supreme Court. That's it. Doesn't say how many justices. And then it says, and lower courts as the Congress shall decide. And so because of the Judiciary Act of 1789 and other acts since then, they've created the federal circuit courts around the country. And they also have created federal district court. Think of them as trial judges. And there's hundreds of them spread around the country. And what has happened, especially during the Trump administration, is left-wing liberal advocates will look for a blue state, supposed left-wing, left-leaning federal district court judge, file a case in front of her or him, and then get a ruling in their favor, knowing that if they do a temporary injunction or so-called nationwide injunction, that slows the Trump administration down to a complete halt. That can be appealed to the circuit court, but, you know, there's a dozen of them around the country. And there's only one Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court only takes, you know, 60, 70 cases a year. So they know that if they flood the zone with all these cases before these liberal federal district court judges, that they're going to thwart the momentum of the Trump administration.
So they've been fairly successful at doing that, but they keep bringing them to the district courts. Does that mean the Trump administration, the White House, can then appeal those at the circuit court level before it goes to the Supreme Court? And are they doing that?
That's the way the ball bounces. You got to start in the district court. You got to start in the trial court. Trial courts are supposed to build a record. They're the finders of fact. And then the losing party, in most instances, can appeal to the circuit court, the appeals courts. Those are not finders of fact. They rule on the law only. There's no juries. There's no witnesses, et cetera. They're just arguments by counsel. And then the losing party there, in most instances, can try to ask the Supreme Court, please take our case. But the Supreme Court takes cases at their own discretion. That's what called a certificate or a petition for certiorari. That means, please take my case. 6,000, 7,000 cases, people, litigants ask for their case to go to the Supreme Court, 60 or 70 get taken up every year. So 10% shot.
Cully Stimson is on the phone with a senior legal fellow at Heritage. So in your view, Cully, who is winning this battle right now? Is the Trump administration, you know, yes, it's slowing it down, but they're eventually winning these cases? Or is the left actually stopping the Trump agenda?
Well, they're certainly trying. And when you have, for example, Judge Reyes here in the District of Columbia, after Trump issued the ban on people with gender dysphoria from serving on active duty in the military, and Secretary Pete Hegseth issued a DOD directive to that effect, she ruled and issued a temporary injunction against the Trump administration. So apparently she's playing junior admiral in the Navy, so they cannot process people with gender dysphoria, which is a mental health disorder, out of the military. And the cases go on and on and on. And so the Trump administration was smart. They had 4 years in the wilderness to try to prepare for Trump 2.0. They flooded the zone themselves with a tsunami of executive orders. And the left has started to get their act together. And they've been, you know, the resistance is alive and well. So it's an ongoing battle. And I suspect, knowing the left as I do, they will continue that for all 4 years.
You know, we've seen a lot of bluster in Congress about them saying, well, we need to stop activist judges from single-handedly, you know, stopping an elected president from carrying out what the people voted for. But is Congress able to, and are they actually moving toward doing anything to stop this process or to change it?
Well, yeah, two quick points. First answer is yes. Actually, Heritage came up with an idea in 2017. My colleague Hans von Spakovsky, who's on this radio program all the time, wrote a paper and testified about how instead of just letting one judge issue a temporary injunction or a nationwide injunction to cover the whole country, you should do what you do in the Voting Rights area, and that is have three federal district court judges get together for any case where the person is asking for a nationwide injunction, and then the losing party can immediately appeal to the Supreme Court, in other words, skip over the courts of appeals. That has been drafted into a bill. That bill has now passed. It's called the SAVE Act, the House. So we'll see, because the Senate and the House are out for 2 weeks, we'll see whether the Senate takes it up and they can get it over the 60-vote margin. The other thing to point out is the remedy for curing a bad opinion tends in the past to be appealing that opinion. But some of these opinions are so far out of the mainstream that a SAVE Act is a remedy that the House has now passed and the Senate should seriously consider. Because, by the way, it works both ways, right? The left complained when red states were suing the Biden administration for things like, for example, you know, Biden illegally just paying off student loans, and they stopped him. He lost at the Supreme Court. And so I suspect if the lefties actually think about it, they actually would be support the SAVE Act.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's another major news item that's working its way through, obviously, through Congress. Like you said, the House has already passed it. Will the Senate pass it? Will they get over the filibuster to be able to pass it? But the argument that I keep seeing, and I'm hoping you could shed some light on this, because I genuinely don't know. They're saying, the left is saying, well, we can't pass the SAVE Act because it would make it harder for women to vote. Is that true?
Of course not. Of course not. Last time I checked, you and I and everyone we know who's 16 or older has to have a real ID compliant ID. Usually you get it through your DMV. I'm married. I don't know if you're married, but my wife, who's a professional, she didn't have a hard time voting. No one I know has a hard time voting. It's the same canard about requiring voter ID. It's the same tried and true and fake response that, well, you know, if you require a voter ID to vote, vote totals, especially in the black community, is going to go down. Of course, as soon as those states rolled those things out, Indiana, North Carolina, Georgia, vote totals went up in those communities. They also offered those IDs for free. So no one's going to be denied. And by the way, don't women have jobs? Because last time I checked, they do. And to get a job, they have to prove that they're lawfully able to work in this country, which means they have to have already shown the proof of citizenship or work authorization. So it's a complete farce, and it's meant to give them the patina of a fig leaf to vote against it.
Yeah, it seems like the argument, and this, I didn't want to just assume this, but I mean, we've seen this playbook enough times that I'm like, well, I figure that's what it is. That the argument was, at its core, you know, we think that white men are the only people smart enough to get IDs. I mean, that's what it seemed to boil down to. And I'm like, that can't be the Democrat argument, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, but they've used it before. Remember when Indiana passed a voter ID law, Georgia passed a voter ID law, The best argument they could come up with was, well, this is confusing. It'll drive down the black vote. It's expensive. So they made them free. They provided them transportation to get the ID. No one hardly took them up on that. And the vote totals in the African-American community went up. And so there's no there, but they'll keep trotting out the same argument because for some reason their political consultants say it's working. It's not. It's actually boomeranging against them.
Cully, before
no one buys it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I try to approach these things and think, well, maybe, you know, is there a realistic, you know, argument against this? But I just couldn't find it, so I wanted to ask.
I can't find it.
Especially in light of states having done these things and voter turnout going up. I mean, there right. really is no argument against it. Cully, before we run out of time with you, though, your book, I want to just ask you to just you know, give us kind of an idea about your book, because I love the topic, Rogue Prosecutors, How Radical Soros Lawyers Are Destroying America's Communities. What do people get when they buy this book?
Well, you get a whole chapter on Kim Gardner, your former DA there, and it's a true crime novel. So it's like a John Grisham-y type novel, but we focus on 8 cities where there were Soros bought and paid for rogue prosecutors and tell true crime stories that happened in those cities that would not have happened had they been law and order DAs. We also trace in the first chapter the origins, playbook, and belief of the movement. Comes out of the prison abolitionist movement, comes out of the belief that if you send somebody to prison, it's a modern day slave plantation. Those are their words, not my words. And the second chapter traces all the money paid by the billionaires, including Soros, to buy these prosecutors, $50 million or more in direct spending and about $1 billion in indirect spending. And then the last chapter is the way forward and how you can identify a Soros-type candidate and make sure that you do the right thing and don't put them in office in the first place.
I know I said that was a lot.
Audible, by the way, too.
Real quick, though. A lot of these NGOs, this is a totally different, huge topic, so I know there's no time, but is a lot of this money that's funding these things, is this starting to dry up?
No, not on the Soros Road prosecutors. In fact, his son Alex said he's going to double down. And so look for so-called safety and justice PACs at the state level, because those are the Soros front machines to fund these radical rogues who are pro-criminal, anti-victim, and cop haters.
Thanks for shooting straight with us, Cully Stimson. I appreciate your time, and you're always invited to come back to St. Louis and see how it's doing. Hopefully, from your outsider's perspective, we're turning the corner.
Would love it. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.